You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome back to Tuesday, which feels like Monday because yesterday was Monday that wasn't really Monday.
That's exactly right.
And Boomer's on the board.
That's exactly how I feel.
I mean, just like, what day is this right now? I don't even know.
So confused.
I was in Huntsville, actually, yesterday going to visit our daughter and son-in-law, and Charlene and I were driving down the road, and I realized what time it was because the alarm on my phone went off, and I turned on us.
You turned...
I'm like, this is so weird. I'm not there.
Us.
Yeah. And so you and I are on the radio. And I'm like, so anyway, all of y'all forgive us because we take time off once in a while too. But we're glad to be back with you on this Tuesday, which feels like a Monday. So with that being said, we got a great show laid on for you. 2:30 today. Golly, bomb, Boomer. I got the throat tickle going again.
That throat tickle gets you every time right now.
2:30 today, Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth coming in, if I can make it through. Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth at 2:30. We're going to be talking about infrastructure, about taxes, all of it. And then at 3 o'clock, right after that, State Senator Chris Elliott coming in to talk to us about some of the same with a little bit different flavor. I mean, folks, it's amazing how political road and bridge construction gets. It's just like unnatural. But hey, we'll talk to State Senator Chris Elliott about that in conjunction with a Triple Dipper. Hit it, buddy.
The Triple Dipper. Three stories you've got to know.
That's right. The Triple Dipper. Three stories, three themes, if you will, that you got to know as we run today's show right out the gate. I mean, that's kind of like what I said a moment ago. I'm calling this one the politics of asphalt. The politics of asphalt. Is there anything more political than asphalt? It sounds like a weird question, but you stop and think about it. Next time you see a mayoral election in your city, look around and see how much new blacktop is going down in your city. Look who I am. I paved your roads. I mean, people go to jail over road paving. It's nuts. It's big doings. It's big money. And we'll talk about it. Number one, the politics of asphalt. That's coming up. Number two, listen, you may have heard the phrase, Nero fiddled while Rome burned. There are some comparisons, and I'm going to go there. There are some comparisons right now to Nero fiddling while Rome burned and the way that Biden handles his administration during crises, because he is never there. He is always deflecting blame. And oh, by the way, he is basically on vacation. So I'm going to talk about it. Number two, Nero fiddles with comparisons to where we are today. And then number three, you know how it is. Sometimes when I'm getting ready for the show and I'm going, wow. Oh, the wokeness. Layers upon layers of wokeness. Wokeness in depth. And that's what we got to wind up having today is adventures in woke world. All right. Let me move on here. My monologue, as always, sponsored by Southern Immediate Care. Southern Immediate Care, a chain of clinics throughout the North Alabama area. And, man, they do great work. Southern Immediate Care, this is who I use. And it is apparent to me that they are making a dent. I mean, I'm hearing people go in there all the time. Locations all over North Alabama, and proud to be the sponsor of the daily Right Side Way monologue. So here we go. I was telling Boomer about this movie beforehand. It's one of those that I've just put on his must-see list. But I'm going to take you back a bit in modern movie history. 1979. It was the same year that the movies of Superman and Apocalypse Now and Alien and 10 all came out. All right, there were some epic films in that year. But there was also one cult classic that caught the studios by surprise. It was a movie that some said would be forgotten immediately, and yet it's created a few phrases and moments that have lived on in pop culture. And I'm going to bet that most of you have seen it. It's the movie called The Warriors. It was a crazy flick, man. It was realistic and yet not realistic. Something about it seemed like real enough, but at the same time, kind of fanciful. But here's the backdrop, and then I'll get to my main point. So the premise of the movie, it centers around the life of one group of guys from a Coney Island gang called the Warriors. They wear leather vests with their colors on the back. They all have nicknames like Ajax and Swan and Cochise and Snow and Cowboy. At the beginning of the movie, the main characters are traveling from Coney to a large park in the Bronx because a temporary truce has been called by the biggest gang in New York City, a gang called the Gramercy Riffs, and their charismatic leader named Cyrus. So Cyrus has called for a gathering of 9 representatives from all of the major gangs in New York. Interesting factoid, by the way, the script for the Warriors movie was based off an ancient Greek writing by a guy named Xenophon about the Greek army marching against the Persian king Cyrus. Anyway, the 9 warriors in the movie joined a huge group of hundreds of gang members that were there to hear Cyrus pitch a plan that all the gangs unite and take over the city. So the speech by Cyrus is one of those cinematic moments that just worked. I'll get back to that in a moment. But for the warriors who attended, it went badly. Cyrus was assassinated right as a major police operation descended on the park. And as police officers rushed in and began making arrests, chaos descended and the Warriors were framed for the murder of Cyrus. And the Gramercy Riffs, they put out a hit on the Warriors, and they spent the rest of the movie doing what the characters in the movie called bopping their way through rival gang territories 30 miles back to Coney Island. So yeah, they fought through some crazy gangs like the Turnbull ACs and the Baseball Furies, the Lizzies, the Punks. Every block was a different fight. Throughout the whole thing, there was this night shift radio DJ lady who kept announcing their progress and playing songs dedicated to the next fight. Another interesting factoid here, by the way, the recent hit movie John Wick 4 with Keanu Reeves, it paid homage to the Warriors by recreating the DJ scenes, keeping all the assassins who were after Wick apprised of his progress as he fought his way across the city. And one of the main characters, by the way, from the Warriors movie also plays a recurring bit in the John Wick movies. Anyway, at the end of the movie, the Warriors made it back to Coney, but they were followed by some lowlifes who had shot Cyrus, actually, and then framed them for his death. And in one of those enduring pop culture moments, the scuzzy little character named Luther, he's clacking some beer bottles together. He starts taunting them by yelling, "Warriors, come out to play!" In the end, 6 of the 9 Warriors made it back. They got to watch the sunrise on their beach. But let me go back to the original scenes. There's a thread of a scary but true going on in the original speech that was given by Cyrus, the leader of the biggest gang in the city. So Cyrus and his Gramercy Riffs, they've come to the realization in the movie that if they can pull together all the gangs, unite the gangs, keep a truce, that they can run the streets. They can rule it all. In his evangelistic style, Cyrus ramps up the crowd by pointing out how many gangs were represented there that night in the park. And he said this, here's a quote. He goes, "Here's the sum total. One gang could run this city. Nothing would move without us allowing it to happen. We could tax the crime syndicates and the police because we got the streets, suckers. Can you dig it?" At which point the crowd went wild. And he went on to say this. He said, "The turf is ours by right. All we have to do is keep up the truce and secure one borough at a time because it's all our turf." At which point, like he was saying amen or something, he yelled again, "Can you dig it?" Which is one of those pop culture moments. So here's why I'm talking about that movie. So this scene with Cyrus, it seemed kind of fanciful. It seemed like good theater, nothing more. The very idea that bad guys could control a whole city so even the police pay taxes to the gangs, come on. How could it ever get to that point, right? That was just Hollywood depicting New York City in 1979. But now there's Chicago in 2023. Here's the deal. In a story that is stranger than fiction, city leaders in Chicago are ceding control of the streets to the gangs. In July of this year, a story ran on Fox that was titled, quote, "Defund the Police Movement Wrecks America's Third Largest City." The story described how liberal policies and defunding the police and so-called bail reform and weak district attorneys who won't prosecute crime, they've all coalesced into a nightmare situation in which one of America's finest urban centers has now reached the point where citizens have a 1 in 13 chance of being the victim of crime. On average, Chicago is now 67% riskier for citizens than the average in the U.S. In February of this year, using 2022 stats, Chicago was named the murder capital of the U.S. with 697 total murders. If you ever spend any time in Chicago, you know it's a beautiful place, has a lot going for it. But the city is wasting away under liberal policies. And 2 weeks ago, it got even weirder when city leaders and civic groups decided that it was necessary to call a truce with the gangs. I mean, they're not even pretending. Now they're just ceding control to the gangs. And by the way, it's not the gangs calling for it. It's not like the movie with Cyrus saying, keep up the truce, take one borough at a time. Now this time, the call is coming from others who recognize they aren't able to get the help they need from the police who've been defunded and degraded and demoralized. The story goes, in reality, that a local civic group, who I admire for what they've been doing to provide healthy, safe activities for kids in the streets, it's a group called the Native Sons, they proposed something in August that they call the People's Ordinance. They actually footed out a proposal that seeks to have rival gangs in the city refrain from shooting each other between the hours of 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Yeah. They say, quote, the goal is to approach our city's gun violence problem strategically and not all at once. Well, all right, it's a novel approach. It's citizens recognizing the streets are already in a bad way and the gangs have the upper hand, so why not make a deal with the bad guys so we can walk around by day and they can do their murderous mayhem at night. But it gets weirder, a whole lot weirder, when you realize that just last week, one of the elected Chicago aldermen sitting on the city council, a lady named Maria Haddon, who identifies herself as, quote, the first black queer woman to serve on the Chicago City Council, has taken up the call by grabbing the idea and making it her own. A city councilwoman wants a truce with the gangs. Hold off on killings until darkness, folks. This is the same alderwoman, by the way, whose Facebook page said in December of 2020 that she remained, quote, committed to divesting funding from policing to reinvest in community services. That's a city councilwoman. Listen, when people are dying in the streets, you don't make deals with the killers. When the crime statistics are rising on your watch, you don't make silly little plays for peace among the criminals so you can walk safely to and fro. When you do that, you've ceded the city to the gangs. You have just made Chicago the sequel to the Warriors. Except this time, the gangs win. This time, the play made by Cyrus actually prevails. Can you dig it? And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Yeah, it's just a messed up situation. I mean, the movie was fanciful. All the gangs come together, keep a truce. They don't shoot each other. They just take over the city. They run the place. And now what you've got is city councilwomen in Chicago asking the gangs, please, don't shoot each other during the daytime. Let us walk around at daytime and you can shoot each other at night. That'll be great. Listen, all you did was just say, law and order, it doesn't matter. The gangs are in charge. Warriors come out to play. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, making it cool to be a conservative. So I'm waiting for some of the text messages regarding the Warriors movie. Some of y'all had to have seen it. I mean, what was your favorite gang? I mean, there were the Turnbull ACs that I swear eat their dead based on the way they looked in the movie. And then there were the Baseball Furies, who I always thought were cool, but they're also kind of ridiculous. And then there were the punks who just, I don't know, had the one dude on the roller skates. That was kind of cool. And then we had the Lizzies. That was a name that should have given it away. And, I mean, it just went on and on and on. And then, of course, you had the secret thugs, the guys who were sort of trailing throughout, who had framed them that were, I think they were actually called, I forgot what they were called now, the Butchers or the Thugs or something. I forget what. But anyway, all said and done, crazy but cool movie. It's one of those that when it's on TV, if I'm flipping the channels, I have to stop and watch for a minute because, you know, I just got to because, well, I mean, it's the Warriors. So anyway, great movie. Hey, I got a mini dipper for you. All right. So mini dipper, not part of the dipper. This The show was prepped this morning before this news broke. But yeah, just so you know, we've talked about it on the show many times, the redrawing of Alabama's congressional district lines. So just a quick refresher on it. The legislature, every 10 years, because of the census, has to draw the lines. You draw it for state school boards, state legislative districts, for the congressional districts, and you draw it based on population. So if the census shows that more people have moved to Huntsville, then you may wind up having to shift the lines to incorporate or to change out which districts have some people. Got to keep a certain percentage, plus or minus, of the total number you're supposed to have. All right, that being said, Alabama has 7 congressional districts. Lo and behold, we drew the lines this last time, and as is always expected nowadays, they immediately get sued by the liberals. And in this case, it was kind of odd because we thought, you know, well, we pretty much drew the district lines the way they've been since like 1992. It wasn't good enough. They said we didn't consider race enough. And our response was basically, I thought we weren't supposed to consider race as a primary factor. Well, you need more race, though, when it's the right race. What does that mean? I mean, do we have to find Asian districts now, Hispanic districts now, white districts now? How does this work? Well, it's the Voting Rights Act of 1965, I believe. And so it basically means there have to be some measure of black districts so that, you know, black citizens of Alabama have an opportunity to elect someone of their own color, I guess. Anyway, that being said, we drew new lines. They were taken to court. And then we were shocked to find that we were going to be told by a 3-judge panel from the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals that, you're actually going to have to wind up redoing that. Wait, what? So we went to the Supreme Court of the United States, and SCOTUS agreed. SCOTUS agreed, but it was kind of a narrow play because there was reason to believe by the way that Justice Kavanaugh wrote his concurrence that maybe if something had been said or done differently, he might not have voted with the majority and it might have been in the other direction. So here's the deal. The legislature had no choice then but to draw new maps. They drew new maps. They came out with them about, 6-8 weeks ago. The new maps are out. Of course, they went back to the court for review. The court came out today and said, no, your maps are not good enough. In fact, they really kind of chastised Alabama for not doing more to draw a second majority black district. Okay, so now what's going to wind up happening, as of today, as of this morning, the court is going to wind up appointing a special master. That means basically some guy who's going to be in charge of drawing a new map. And he'll probably have a team with him, but they'll draw new maps, and then we have to live with it. Except that I guarantee you that the Attorney General of the state of Alabama has already cooked up his appeal, and he's prepared to go to the Supreme Court of the United States and see if he can swing Justice Kavanaugh and change all this because it affects every state in the nation. There you have it. Mini Dipper, redrawing the lines. Coming right back, Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth. We will be right back.